Well, let's turn to the book of Proverbs, Proverbs chapter 6. It's easy to remember where we're going to be, Proverbs 6:6, starting in verse 6. Many of you probably can't see this picture, but if you can, it really nails what we're going to be talking about tonight. It's a cat sleeping on a fence. And right under it, it says, "Beware of dog." And that cat is totally knocked out, zoned out to what's probably about to happen to that poor creature when the dog jumps up and does whatever. We'll be looking at today, tonight, at the perils of procrastinating, of putting things off, of being oblivious, the danger, as our passage says, of a little sleep, a little slumber, because you don't know what's going to be coming. It's the opposite of what God does, just like we sang. I sing the mighty power of God. I sing the goodness of the Lord that filled the earth with food. He is diligent. He's doing it out there in the creation. Lord, how your wonders are displayed. There's not a plant or flower before that makes your glories known, while all that borrows life from you is ever in your care. And this is the opposite of that. But the one we sang about, this is not our example, but the one we sang about tonight in both hymns, and we'll close with a hymn like that too, is both our example and our enablement, because he's in us to do this through it. So what we're going to be talking about tonight is not legalism. It's ultimately by his power. We'll see that when it comes to getting things done, to accomplishing the important things in life, cat napping can be habit forming. So watch out. But if you put these things off that we need to be doing, according to Solomon, the consequences can become our oppressors, and soon the barking of all that we're not doing is all that we're going to be hearing. And it can lead to some procrastination, as I've titled this sermon, leads to depression, or at least it oftentimes it does. It can rob you of your joy, your peace, and a whole lot else. It's in Proverbs 6, and the passage climaxes really in verse 10, where it says, "A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and your poverty will hound you like a robber, and your need like a armed man." This cat is about to be hounded, literally, and we don't want to be in those shoes. If this doesn't apply to you, it may apply to someone you love, a son or a daughter or a granddaughter or a grandson, and maybe you'll get some things tonight that from God's word that will be helpful as you counsel them. We come once again today to Solomon's life principle, number 7, the 7th in the series of 10 principles that you'll find in Proverbs 1-9, these first principles from a second father, the 10 commandments of wisdom. Principle 7 is what chapter 6 is all about, where Solomon warns us against four things, four perils that at first don't seem to be all that connected. We hear about the dangers of debt. That was last week, Proverbs 6, 1-5. This week, the dangers of laziness. Next week will be the dangers of wickedness in general. And then the final week in chapter 6 will be the dangers of sexual promiscuity in particular. But we saw that they all illustrate a single principle in four ways, a fundamental life principle, and that is principle number 7, to think consequentially. Think consequentially. So important is this 7th commandment of wisdom that later on, Solomon's going to go on to devote 3 entire chapters to it. To thinking consequentially, in Proverbs chapters 22, 23, and 24. In one verse after another, he says, for instance, Proverbs 22, 22, "Do not rob the poor because he is poor, or crush the afflicted in the gate." Why? Well, because of the consequence. Next verse, "For the Lord will please their cause and take the life of those who rob them." Think consequentially. God's on their side. Proverbs 22, 24, "Do not associate with a man given to anger, or go with a hot-tempered man." Why? Well, because of the consequences, lest you learn his ways and find a snare for yourself. Proverbs 22, 29, "Do you see a man skilled in his work? He will. Why? He's saying the hard work of becoming really skilled in your career is worth it, whatever your career happens to be, whether as a teacher or an engineer. What do you see a man skilled in his work? Why is it so important to do the hard work necessary for that? Because he will stand before kings. He will not stand before obscure men. That is, the odds are you will be recognized, and so it'll be worth it. And then for the next two chapters, that's chapter 22, all of chapter 23 and 24, in one proverb after another, we see the consequences of our behaviors, both good and bad. It's the law of the harvest. You reap what you sow. Think consequentially. And so that's what's coming. This is so important that there are three chapters devoted to it. And here he devotes one chapter to it. Solomon trains us to do this in chapter 4 by unpacking it more. He tells us about the consequences of four foolish behaviors. First, if you co-sign, as we saw last week, that's chapter verses 1 to 5, you could end up losing your shirt. Co-sign and lose shirt. Wisdom from Charlie Chan. Co-sign, lose shirt. Which also applies, we saw last week, to debt in general. Beware. Second, if you're lazy, as he says in our verses for tonight, verses 6 to 11, you're playing with poverty. And not just economic poverty, but emotional and spiritual poverty too. Depression. In more ways than one, procrastination precedes depression. Very basic. Proverbs 6 again, starting in verse 6. Let's read it first. Go to the ant, O sluggard. Observe her ways and be wise. Which, having no chief, no officer or ruler, prepares her food in the summer and gathers her provision in the harvest. How long will you lie down, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, yawn, a little folding of the hands to rest, and your poverty will come like a vagabond, and your need like an armed man. A little sleep, a little slumber. Procrastination precedes depression. Again, this might not apply to you, but it might apply to someone you love. So here's some ideas you might use in counseling them, or you might suggest they listen to this online. Notice what's most unusual about the ant, compared to people anyway, at least to some people. It's in verse 7. She has no chief, no ruler, no boss, no parent telling her what to do, looking over her or his shoulder, yet still the ant works hard. The ant teaches us that men and women of integrity work hard whether or not the boss is there. But so often, it's like one comedian said, I've met a few people in my life who were enthusiastic about work, and it was just my luck that all of them happened to be men I was working for at the time. Too many people need a boss, not realizing it's the Lord Christ that we serve. Second thing is this, she prepares her food in the summer and gathers her store in the harvest. That is, she gathers her store for the future. It's not just a day-by-day living that she's focused on. The Hebrew implies that she collects her food in the early summer for her immediate needs, but in the late harvest, she also stores up for her future needs. Needs that will arise in the winter months. That is, far from borrowing, she actually gets into saving. Novel idea. Huge problem in America, where just before everything went south in the last financial crisis, we actually had a negative rate of savings, the lowest rate of savings in our history, the lowest in the developed world. And those rates are creeping down once again now that the stock market is hyperinflated. So we don't need to save. But finally, not just that she's a saver. Notice how she's not just a hard worker, she's a steady worker. She just plods on from early summer to late autumn. It might not seem like you're putting that much away as you're saving, for instance, dollar by dollar, but it builds up if you plod on. It's like one of our senators said a long time ago, a billion here, a billion there, and pretty soon it adds up to some real money. A penny here, a penny there, it will add up. To these days, they're saying a trillion here, a trillion there. And it's not saving, it's deficit spending. And look what we're reaping. Far from saving for a rainy day, we are going to be reaping a tsunami. And if you're an aunt, you'll be storing up in light of what could happen in the future. The winter months are come. They always come eventually. So the ant always saves. Prudent thing to do. This applies not only to saving steadily, but to working steadily, like the ant does. It reminds me of what C.S. Lewis said to someone that he was tutoring who had procrastinated until the last minute to start his term paper, and then he complained to Lewis that he had stayed up the whole night before just to get it done for his meeting with Lewis that day. To which Lewis said, "Young man, you don't have to work hard if you work steady. Only the innately lazy man is a hard worker." Let me repeat it. I've had to repeat it to myself many times. You don't have to work hard if you work steady. Only the innately lazy man procrastinates, right? Only the innately lazy man is a hard worker. With some people, if it weren't for the last minute, nothing would ever get done. I've been there. I've done that. It's like William Carey said, father of modern missions. He translated the Bible into 34 languages and dialects through 40 years of labor. And he said, "I'm not a genius. I'm just a plotter." That's what happens if you're like the ant. It's the nursery school, the nursery story about the rabbit and the turtle and the hare. So often the race is not to the swift, not to the steady, but to the steady, because life's not a sprint, it's a marathon. Putting it all together, what Solomon's talking about here is classic procrastination. A little sleep, a little slumber. Because one of the greatest, someone said, one of the greatest labor-saving inventions of today is tomorrow. Like Mark Twain said, never put off till tomorrow what you can do the day after tomorrow. Solomon teaches that this brand of laziness, this chronic procrastination, can be as soft and subtle and as enjoyable as falling asleep. That's what it's like. It just comes over you. Zoning out in front of the computer or of the TV with the remote in hand. Same thing. Yet such behavior can lead to a very rude awakening, which is why if you look especially at the Hebrew, but it even comes across in the English, Solomon is carefully crafting these verses. And what we get is this slow, steady build-up to a quick and ugly conclusion. The quick and ugly conclusion is verse 11, "And your poverty will come suddenly without warning. Your poverty will come like a robber and your need like an armed man," and it's all over. How so? Well, there are many ways of illustrating this, many different applications to bring it home to the modern day, to our own experience. It's like what happened in Monk's Corner, South Carolina. Reader's Digest reported a while back that a truck knocked down a power pole and the lights went out all over town. Within 10 minutes, six people showed up at the utility company to pay their electric bill. It can happen like that if you procrastinate on your bills. Procrastination is a good prescription, he's saying, for some very unpleasant surprises, even poverty. For one kind of depression or another, whether acute or chronic, financial depression, vocational depression, spiritual, emotional. Going to sleep on utility bills can do it, or on credit card debt, or on the national debt. Or going to sleep on that job search. That's easy to do. Or on a term paper, or all those unreturned phone calls, or papers that need to be filed. This applies to all those items as men on our wives' honey-do list. Julie doesn't like to nag me, so she just writes little notes and leaves them in places. And so I get this honey-do list, and it's so easy just to procrastinate on that thing, and then I'm under a cloud, and then she wonders if I even care. You know, it applies on so many different levels. And after a while, you start to feel like Gulliver in Gulliver's Travels. Remember the guy, the giant? Gulliver ended up in this little land of Lilliput, and he was a giant in that land. And when he woke up, suddenly he realized that they had tied him down with 1,000 little strings, and he couldn't get back up. That's what procrastination does. I just read that the average desk of the average American office has 30 hours of unfinished paperwork on it. You know, no wonder people don't like going to work. How many emails do you have in your inbox? Don't you hate those things? It's like these little piranhas that eat away at your day until there's nothing left in that day. Procrastination may be easier for you, but it's always far harder on you. Pretty soon, you have this backlog of unfinished business that emotionally is like a ball and chain. I've learned so much from Julie here, and I can talk about her because she's not here tonight, but she gets things done just like that. I have to put them up because I've got to think about it, and I want to do it perfectly. You know, all this stuff. She just does it. Laziness grows on people, one man wrote. It begins in cobwebs and ends in iron chains. You can have the opposite. Yes, some people are addicted to work, and that can be just as bad in other ways, but others are more kind of allergic to it. That's why studies show that 20% of the average worker's time is wasted. In effect, in America, it's produced a four-day work week. You just do your work, and you'll succeed these days. There's so little competition, especially if you work for the government. So don't be like all the people who quit looking for work once they find a job. Get it? No. I could go on and on with this, but under it all, just to put it in a broader biblical perspective now, it's the Protestant work ethic that we're talking about tonight, right? The notion that work is valuable in and of itself. It's an end in and of itself for the ant. Unlike the prevailing view of our American culture, at least in times and places in our country, that would have us believe that it's a necessary evil, right? Where a mere means to an end, a mere means to the end of money or of things or of entertainment or recreation or retirement. Time magazine did a cover story on the subject a while back titled, "Is the Work Ethic Going Out of Style?" And it included that we live in an entertainment culture. And so it's all over the place. Early retirement, chronic absenteeism, refusing overtime work, refusing to hold menial jobs, etc., etc. The Protestant work ethic is fundamental to the whole Judeo-Christian tradition, to what's best in the West and for America and for our own lives, that it may be well with us. And that's why you find it all over the place in Scripture. It's so important. 6 days you shall what? Do your work. Exodus 34:21. If anyone does not provide for his own, 1 Timothy 5:8, and especially for those of his own household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Pretty important stuff. Whatever you do, Colossians 3:21, do your work what? Heartily, as for the Lord and not for men. Not lagging behind in diligence, Romans 12:1. Fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. Ecclesiastes 9:10, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. Ecclesiastes 11:6, sow your seed in the morning and do not be idle in the evening. The book of Proverbs fleshes this out more than any other book in the Bible because this is a very serious issue. It's like the classic book that Jerry White wrote, President of the Navigators, Your Work Matters to God. If diligence is next to godliness, then laziness in this context is next to wickedness. And we have that on good authority because it's what Christ will say to those who didn't do their work. Matthew 25:26. He'll say, "You wicked, lazy slave." In fact, in the Judeo-Christian tradition, laziness, otherwise known as sloth, has for centuries been reckoned as one of the seven deadly sins. As Chaucer said on way back in Canterbury Tales, these sins are the most fatal to spiritual progress and from which spring all other sins. They are seven deadly sins: pride, envy, gluttony, lust, anger, greed, and sloth. Sloth. It's called an onomatopoetic word. That is, it sounds about like what it means. Sloth. You know, it's a breeding ground for hundreds of other vices. Idle mind is what? Devil's playground. Vices that run wild almost wherever people can't work, wherever it's hard for people to find gainful employment, from the inner city of America to all sorts of other countries with high unemployment. They are fertile fields for all manner of wickedness and for ISIS recruitment. That's where they get their recruits from, people who don't have work so often, and a whole lot else. But on the other hand, hard work is the parent to a whole lot of virtues. And so if by God's grace you do have gainful employment, if you are doing what needs to be done, hard though it may be, you can thank God. As one man said, you can thank God every morning when you get up that you have something to do that day which must be done whether you like it or not. Being forced to work and forced to do your best will breed in you 100 virtues which the idle will never know. Because the highest reward for our work is not what we get for it, but what we become by it. And we have reversed that in America. A man's precious possession, Proverbs 12:27, is his diligence. Priceless. Because it leads to so much else. 12:27. So, what fence are you sleeping on? We all do at times. You know, sleeping on in spite of the sign that says beware of, and then you fill in the blank. Or maybe it's someone you love who needs your counsel. What do you tell them? Beware of not looking hard for work until your unemployment benefits run out. Or your poverty may come like a vagabond. You'll be hounded. Beware of not persisting, not continuing to look for work even though you've been months without a job. Beware of not looking for work now that you've found a job. That is, work hard now that you've found it. Work, look for work where you work. Do your best. If you're into sales, beware of avoiding the phone just because the first 100 said no. Getting back to last week's passage, beware of not working hard to pay off debt that could hound you like an armed man. As someone said, if you think no one cares you're alive, try missing a few car payments. You'll be hounded, right? By the debt collector. Beware of not storing up for the winter, which will come eventually, like the ant does, starting with a good emergency fund. Maybe you stopped working toward anything because you failed at something. Well, then beware of giving up. It will rob you of what you might have become. Let me tell you about someone else who failed many, many things. He was handicapped by less than 3 years of formal education. He failed in business in 31, was defeated for the legislature in 32, failed again in business in 33, was elected to the legislature in 34, defeated for speaker in 38, defeated for elector in 40, defeated for Congress in 43, elected to Congress in 46, defeated in 48, defeated for Senate in 55, defeated for vice president nominee in 56, defeated for Senate in 58. Who was he? Abraham Lincoln. If you stop working toward anything because you failed at something or someone you love has, what do you tell them? Well, based on this wisdom, you tell them the secret of success, and you might want to write this down. The secret of success is to go from failure to failure with increasing enthusiasm. That's the story of successful people. The secret of success is to go from failure to failure with increasing enthusiasm. If you're looking for work, or your son is, or a friend, or if you find yourself looking for work in the months to come, and who knows what's going to happen in the future, what do you tell them? What do you tell yourself based on this wisdom of what might happen in the future? As much as you can, you need to consider looking for work as your full-time job. And maybe the library will need to be your office if there are too many distractions for this at home. You leave at 8 and you come back at 5. That's your job. Maybe it's fear that's putting you to sleep rather than being proactive with some challenge or task, like fear of failure. What do you tell someone then? Well, what you tell them is this: the more you avoid the object of your fear, the bigger that object is going to get, and the more it's going to hound you. So you just do it. Never forget, you must go into your fears, or your fears will control your life. Maybe you're procrastinating because you're a perfectionist. You know, if you can't do, and I can relate to this one, I can relate to a lot of them, but if you can't just do it just so, why even try? Maybe this is someone you love. What do you tell them? It's a great gift to be the kind of person who does things well. You start with the positive. But sometimes you just got to give it up and go into your fear and don't do it well. Right? Just do it. It's better than not doing it at all. It's like G.K. Chesterton said, if it's worth doing, it's worth doing poorly. Some of us need to learn that lesson. Not everything should be done perfectly. So many ways of applying this formative foundational teaching from our second father. Teaching that Paul sums up in the New Testament, Colossians 3:23, whatever you do, do your work heartily, as for the Lord, and not for men, for from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance. Ultimately, we're following God's example, and ultimately, because the Spirit of Christ is in us, we do it by His enablement as we look to Him. We've already sung about His example tonight, and so I thought we'd conclude tonight with the same thing. Let's sing of how He works, how He reigns, and it's the same God who can reign in us to do this through us, which is the gospel. Okay, hymn number four. All praise to God who reigns above.